Welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Undeterred by what they call delays and obstructions by the state government, backers of the Utahns for Ethical Government Initiative are pressing on. UEG says it now has 120,000 signatures, well over the 94,000 they needed to get on the ballot in 2012. Utah Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell and Attorney General Mark Shurtleff, however, are holding to their point that the initiative hasn't qualified for the ballot. Now it looks like the whole matter may be settled through the courts. Joining me in the studio this morning is Vic Arnold. He is the treasurer and co-chair of the Signature Committee for Utahns for Ethical Government. Vic, it's good to have you.
Nice to be here, Jeff.
And we're also glad to have Dixie Huffner, communications chair for UEG. Dixie, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Listeners, give us a call. Have you signed the Utahns for Ethical Government petition? If not, why not? And can we trust state lawmakers to set their own ethics rules? Give us a call at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Dixie or Vic, whichever one of you wants to address this, what are the allegations that UEG is making in this lawsuit against Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell? And why is the lawsuit aimed at the Lieutenant Governor's office specifically?
Well, let me take that one. The lawsuit's aimed at the Lieutenant Governor's office specifically because he is the elections law administrator. That's the charge of the Lieutenant Governor's office. And we are filing suit against the Lieutenant Governor and the 29 county clerks. We need three rulings to come out of the courts. We need an interpretation of the initiative statute because we believe we had a full year to gather the signatures to get on the next regular election ballot. The Lieutenant Governor has taken the position that if we didn't make our goal by last April to get on the 2010 ballot, we have to start over. That's not our interpretation of the statute, so we need the court to resolve that. We need a declaration from the court that we have to have full, complete tabulations from all 29 county clerks and the LG's office so that we can examine exactly how these tabulations have been counted. Interestingly, as soon as we filed the suit, we get the general tabulation from the Lieutenant Governor that night,
right,
which we'd been waiting for 7 months. And third, we are raising the issue as to whether electronic signatures should be valid for ballot initiatives. So we have these three legal issues going forward in this suit.
Three different issues that seems like an awful lot to hope for from the courts. How likely are you to get it?
Well, I think we will get it. I mean, I don't know exactly when we'll get it, but all three of those issues relate to the citizen right, which is a constitutional right, to initiative, to weigh in and legislate if we don't like the legislation of the legislature. So, I mean, the court's prepared to answer all three of those questions. You know, they ruled electronic signatures were valid for Farley Anderson's gubernatorial nomination. So they've already weighed in on the electronics statute, and we think they're fully prepared to weigh in on our claim as well as the other two issues.
Now, the state legislature, of course, just passed SB 165, banning electronic signatures. The ACLU just announced today they're filing a lawsuit against that bill. Do you think that UEG, regardless of whether the law is upheld, is grandfathered in because of your initiative? Do you think electronic signatures will count simply because you gathered them before the law was passed?
Yes. And there's nothing in that law, as we read it, that says it's retroactive. Mm-hmm. And laws typically are not retroactive unless they specifically say that. So, yes.
And Jeff, let me just add that when you look back at previous court cases where judges have ruled on the people's right to engage in the referendum or initiative process, for the most part, the judges have favored the people's right to participate as co-equal members of government with respect to the right to make law. And so where there is a law that contains ambiguity, as as the law did regarding the length of time citizens have to collect signatures. We believe that the court will rule in our favor on that issue. As Dixie mentioned, we have a Supreme Court ruling that should assist us in our efforts to claim the electronic signatures as valid. And with respect to the possible discrepancies from county clerk to county clerk in terms of how they processed and validated the signatures we turned in, just for an example, when we look at the numbers, I mean, we know what we turned in mm-hmm. and have copies of all those signatures. When we look at what we turned in, we see that on the average, the validity rate was about 90% across the state, mm-hmm. with one exception. In Utah County, the four Senate districts that fall largely in Utah County had about an 80% validity rate, or rather 20% were thrown out versus 10% in most other Senate districts.
And you think politics was at play there?
We don't know, but we think that fact demands that the process be looked into.
So, Dixie, as you mentioned, the lieutenant governor, after you filed the suit, came out with his count of the number of signatures. So how many signatures do you feel you have if they were processed correctly, and how many do they say you have?
Well, this relates to what Vic was talking about, because we figured that we had about 15 to 20% over the number that would be required. Mm-hmm. And in most Senate districts, it looked like we had more than enough. And in these, in four districts, it looks like we may not have had quite enough. We felt comfortable that we had enough overage to have succeeded. We knew that some would be disqualified as being not registered voters, or perhaps as having signed twice because over these many months they forgot whether they'd signed, or whether their signature was an address didn't match. I mean, there are reasons for disqualification. That's why we had 20% over. Mm-hmm. But we thought we were safe with that amount.
And do you feel that you were 20% over even without the e-signatures, not even counting them?
That's right, without even counting them. We thought we had made it without the need for e-signatures.
The lieutenant governor, Greg Bell, says he's relying on an opinion from the attorney general's office in declaring that you haven't qualified for the ballot and that you can't reuse signatures from the 2010 initial ballot on your second petition to get on the 2012 ballot. Do you think the lieutenant governor is obligated to follow the opinion of the attorney general? How do you see it?
Well, I don't want to speak for the lieutenant governor. He seems to feel that he needs to follow the advice he's gotten from the attorney general. Whether he's not an attorney, mm-hmm. so he's following the advice he's been given, whether he...
Well, I think he actually is an attorney. But.
Greg Bell is an attorney, but
My mistake. He's not practicing.
We're not sure from what we've experienced over the last year that there is enough independence between the Attorney General's office and the executive branch and the legislative branch. Greg Bell actually told us when we met with him some time ago, after filing our complaint, that he had been experiencing some great pressure from legislators to spike this thing before it could even get legs and get moving. There were constitutional issues and questions raised about our initiative. In that instance, he ruled that our initiative passed constitutional muster. But it's... The fact that the Attorney General has weighed in with his opinion on this as he did, that was no surprise to us. We hope for a much more independent ruling from the Supreme Court.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guests are Dixie Huffner and Vic Arnold with Utahns for Ethical Government. So it sounds like you're kind of saying that you really don't believe that Lieutenant Governor Bell wants to obstruct your initiative. And when he was a state lawmaker, I at least recall him being one of the more open lawmakers to ethics reform. It sounds like you're saying he's doing what he's been told to do, and that's the problem. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'd like to start by agreeing with you. When Lieutenant Governor Bell served as Senator Bell, he was very progressive in terms of trying to move forward and establish some gift bans and some gift limits, mm-hmm. and improve the campaign disclosure laws. We feel as though he's been under extreme pressure from legislators and perhaps the executive branch in general to not be quite so helpful in our efforts.
Let's go back to talking about electronic signatures now banned by Senate Bill 165. A frequent argument that is made against them by state lawmakers is this idea that we'd be venturing into new territory. No other state has ever done this before, and it's risky to be the first to do so. Is there truth to that?
They're certainly willing to be the first to step out in a number of other issues. Just look at immigration this session. I don't think that's a consistent argument.
Or open records.
And also, there's so much experience all across the country with electronic records. And Utah has an Electronic Records Act, and they allow – we can file our tax returns electronically. We can do all kinds of business transactions electronically, all kinds of contracts. And we do not have any history – of election fraud in this state that would cause a problem. And we've had court cases saying fraud is not a legitimate real issue at this point. And they throw that argument out sometimes. Well, it would be too easy. But there are a lot of protections built in. And we had fairly sophisticated electronic signature gathering capability where we had protected from spam, protected mm-hmm. from multiple submissions. We felt that we had a very good system that was not going to create any problem.
Quite honestly, Jeff, we believe that their stated objections to the gathering of electronic signatures are quite disingenuous. We believe it has very little to do with security issues mm-hmm. because those security issues just don't seem to exist. As Dixie mentioned, you can bank online, you can file taxes online. There's no history of this kind of fraud. We believe that what motivated them to rule against electronic signatures was the fear that too many of the citizens of this great state would get involved without having to find a signature a packet to sign at a grocery store. Mm-hmm. They could do it from the convenience of their home. And this could happen around the state. We think that the fear that the citizens might gain the upper hand in this battle for power that seems to be going on in this state between the citizens who elect our officials supposedly to serve us and the legislators who see themselves as ruling us, ruling the citizens, and they really don't want to see more involvement and participation by the citizens than what currently exists. That's certainly my opinion.
Well, Vic, do you agree with the premise that getting an initiative on the ballot should be reasonably difficult to prevent the kind of thing that we see in California, which has kind of gotten its state government into a mess over all these propositions, for example?
I certainly do, Jeff. Having said that, though, I can assure you, and this is from someone who has been involved in two citizen actions, one the private school voucher referendum back in 2007, and more recently, the Ethics Initiative. I can assure you it is extremely difficult to gather the signatures either in a 40-day period to repeal a law that was recently passed or to gather the signatures over a year-long process to get an initiative passed. To begin with, you need a small army of individuals. And it's difficult to find individuals willing to go out and brave the elements and collect signatures. 100,000 signatures is a lot of signatures. Secondly, it requires a lot of money. Now, we were fortunate, or I should say the opponents to the voucher bill were fortunate in having a small army of teachers and PTA members that went out and in 40 days were able to collect 120,000 signatures. Those same members contributed over $100,000 to that cause, and it costs a lot of money then to run a campaign. In our case, with the Ethics Initiative, we did collect, mostly in small donations, over $100,000 just to run the initiative. Printing the initiative booklets was very expensive. So it is not something that can be done easily, and certainly not by a grassroots effort. What you find in many other states that have more lenient initiative laws is big money comes in, and they simply pay individuals to gather signatures because there's usually a corporate interest involved on one side or the other, and it takes a lot of money. We are proud of the fact that we raised over $100,000, almost all of it in small donations from individual citizens here in Utah.
Let me ask, if the court effort is not successful, are you prepared to start from scratch?
We have not made that decision. We certainly do want to keep the pressure on. Mm-hmm. We see the need as remaining. And it's interesting because, you know, the legislature tried to say in response to our initiative, we're going to fix this problem, so we don't need you. And they paid lip service to that, and they did a few minor things that still have a lot of loopholes. They also told us they would be taking seriously their own revision of their own code of conduct, and they would be spending time in interim committee last summer to look at this. And they did spend a little time, and they have done absolutely nothing except weaken their current code of conduct. They did not address it in any significant way during the last session.
How is it weakened?
Well, they used to have a statement in the code of conduct that said that a legislator shall not exercise undue influence on any government agency. They struck it. They took it out. It's not there anymore. Now, admittedly, it's not specific. It's rather a vague concept. But people understand the contours of that. Mm-hmm. Rather than clarify it, they just eliminated it.
Now, going back to what you said, they made some minor fixes. They did revise the Constitution to create an independent ethics commission. Is it fair for you to call that minor? I would say that's pretty major.
I think that was a strategy to try to defeat us at the ballot box if we'd gotten on the initiative last fall. It's not an independent commission. It is very much subject to their control. We have strenuously objected that it was kind of a ruse just to try to defeat ours. It's extremely hard to file a lawsuit as a public citizen, to file a complaint under that commission rule. The meetings are held in secret by the commissioners. They report out only their result, not their findings. Their evidence doesn't go to the legislature. So in many, many ways, it's an extremely weak commission that the public will have very little understanding of. We don't expect to see the legislature really relinquishing much control, if any, under the way they've constituted their commission.
And there's also the issue of campaign contribution limits. That was in your initiative as well, right?
Yeah, and let me point out the obvious, that while that's probably a central feature in our initiative, because we truly believe that if you could point to any one thing taking place in our current system here, it's the influence of big money in elections and consequently in legislation that causes the citizens' views and voice to be silenced or at least limited. And they have not addressed that yet. There is still no limit to what any individual or corporation can contribute. And, Jeff, I want to share one quick story with you. A couple years ago, after Senator Kilpak departed rather abruptly before the beginning of the 09 session, I believe.
Right.
Just because I was curious, knowing that retiring legislators are free to take whatever balance is in their campaign account and use it for personal things, subject to taxes being paid.
Although they did change that, right?
That was changed. That was one of the changes, I believe, that was made in 2009. But at the time I looked, I went online to see what was there in that pot of money, I noticed there was a little over $80,000. Well, that wasn't surprising. But what was more troubling was then I looked deeper into where did these contributions come from? Who gave these contributions over the past few years that added up to some $80,000? And what I found was there wasn't a single listed contribution from any individual living in Senator Kilpak's Senate district. In fact, I'm not sure there were even any contributions from an individual. They were all from corporate PACs and LLCs and business interests. And this is not unusual. When Stuart Adams was appointed to take Senator Bell's position in the Senate, I went online to see what he had. Well, he started with $10,000 left over from his previous tenure in the House. He added another $21,000 to it, and in the run-up to the 2010 election, I looked at where those contributions came from. Again, not a single individual, and in fact, there wasn't a single contribution from anyone living in Davis County. They were all corporations and PACs outside Davis County, and many even from outside the state of Utah. This is what we believe is at the core of the problem with politics in Utah.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. Our guests have been Dixie Huffner and Vic Arnold with the Utahns for Ethical Government Initiative. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, but we really appreciate both of you coming on. Vic, thanks for being here. And Dixie, it's been good to have you as well.
You're welcome.